I'm Marty Moscoane. Welcome to Radio Times. Pennsylvania Governor Tom Corbett and his Democratic challenger Tom Wolf hit the comedy circuit last night in Pittsburgh, all part of the job of running for office in the Commonwealth. Their campaigns just announced the lineup for three debates this fall in Philadelphia, in Harrisburg, and Pittsburgh. Corbett is considered a vulnerable incumbent, and he's come out swinging with some hard-hitting ads. Wolf maintains a lead in their matchup, but not as sizable as it was at the beginning of the summer. Today on Radio Times, it's the debut of a series we're calling Ballot Talks, devoting this hour every Thursday for the next few months to a range of election issues of interest to the region with a mix of smart, seasoned, and opinionated guests. And we begin with two Radio Times regulars. Here with us in our Philadelphia studios is Dave Davies, senior reporter for WHYY. He also has his off-mic blog at Newsworks. And Dave, always a pleasure. Nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Good to be back with you, Marty.
And also with us and joining us by telephone is Chris Borick. He's a professor of political science at Muhlenberg College, also director of the Muhlenberg College Institute of Public Opinion. And Chris Borick, always nice to have you with us on Radio Times as well.
Hi, Marty. Hi, Dave.
Hey, Chris.
And to our listeners, lines open at 1-888-477-9499. We want you to join the conversation. Any questions or comments as we talk about the governor's race, you can also send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and you can send us a tweet at @WHYYRadioTimes. Dave, you know, I think of August, July and August is sort of downtime for people running for office. Not so true this year for the governor's race in Pennsylvania. How come?
Yeah, you know, I'm supposed to be running around in sandals and beachwear, and I've got to actually cover a race. Well, you know, it's kind of like the holiday shopping season, Marty. The campaigns get longer and longer anyway. But one reason is that there's a lot more money in political campaigns now, and if you can afford to advertise for 4 or 5 months, why not do it? If you can advertise in July and August and October, go ahead. But the other imperative in this race is that Tom Corbett needed to make up some ground. I mean, when the primary ended, all of the independent polls showed him trailing Democrat Tom Wolf by about 20 points. And a candidate who looks like he's not competitive is going to have a hard time raising money, both from national sources, who he will count on to come in and stock his campaign chest, and also from people who look for a winner. You know, Pennsylvania is one of the few states with no limits on campaign contributions, and so there is a certain class of contributor who will want to compete for state contracts or be heard on important policy matters. And without calling it pay-to-play, there are people who will want to have the person in the governor's office know that there's somebody who gave them a check. And so if it looks like you're not going to be that guy, you just don't have a shot, you're going to get fewer and smaller checks from that class of people. So Corbett needed to make something happen and close the margin to show that he is a viable candidate.
Chris, do you think that explains not just the number of ads, but also the fact that they are largely critical of his challenger, Tom Wolf?
Yeah, I do, Marty. I think, as Dave noted, it's really important for Tom Corbett to make a case that he is viable, right? I mean, I think a lot of people, including people in his own party, have started to look past him, and that's deadly for a candidate. And so the governor has tried hard to come out, as they say, swinging, and look like he has a chance here, and given the poor polling, it's important for him to see some movement, both for funders and for people in his party, and just to get a sense that he can. And of course, for an incumbent governor that's well known in the state, to be able to pick up the types or close the type of margin that the polls have shown he's in, it's going to mean he's going to have to bring Tom Wolf back. You know, Wolf's popularity has been high, his favorabilities have been high. He came off a very successful campaign in the Democratic primary. And I think the conclusion that the Corbett campaign has made is that they're not going to be able to, by themselves, raise a well-known governor's profile and public image to the level where they might be able to catch Wolf. They've got to bring Wolf back. And I think that's what we've seen with the early ads and the tenor of those ads. They're directed at diminishing Wolf's standing.
And Chris, why is the governor, Governor Corbett, why is he so vulnerable?
Oh, it's a great question, Marty, and it's multifaceted. I don't think this is a case of one issue, you know, one bad decision. It's a confluence of a number of factors. One is Of course, education. I think we've seen a direct correlation between public perceptions of his cuts to education and public education in the state and his standing among voters. There's an array of factors that are some of them fairly unique. The Penn State scandal, I still think, is one that dogs him among especially the fairly large Penn State alumni community. And full disclosure, I'm part of that community in the state. I think it's
you and everybody else. I think in the state,
you throw a stick and you'll see them.
Exactly.
But that issue continues to hurt him among Republicans. There's been a sense that there's been a wasted opportunity. The stars have aligned for Republicans in 2010 after the Rendell years with control of both the House, the Senate, and the governor's office in the state, and there was optimism to really move Republican agenda items that simply haven't come to fruition, so there's disappointment within Republican ranks. You start adding up this list, and it really spells his fairly dismal public standing at this point.
Dave, you want to add to that? You and I were talking about education before the show began, but just to sort of build on what Chris Bork just said.
No, that's right. I think, you know, and it's interesting, Marty, because there was recently a poll conducted, a robo-calling poll conducted by Magellan, which is a traditionally Republican polling outfit, which showed Corbett within 12 points of Wolf. But when you looked inside of it, it was clear that among their sample that Corbett was perceived as having cut education overwhelmingly. And that's a problem. It's a big issue here in Philadelphia, as folks know, but it's also an issue in a lot of suburban and rural school districts where they're facing fiscal stresses. And so it matters to voters. I think that does hurt them. I think Chris is right. I think the Penn State thing is a fascinating example of an issue that hurts Corbett in a number of ways, and it's an issue that people connect to emotionally, and those are the ones that often motivate voters, as opposed to, say, pensions, which may be really, really important, but kind of don't grab people viscerally. The only other thing I'll add is that, you know, it would help if Corbett were a charismatic politician who had a history of going out there and just presenting himself, if he were great on television and if he did a lot of public appearances and established him as somebody that you liked and had a vision. And, you know, the governor is just – he's a guy who grew up who came through the ranks as a prosecutor and was elected on a campaign of holding the line on taxes and holding government spending, which are principles that a lot of people in this state are drawn to. But he kind of doesn't have the kind of personal following that somebody that, say, an Ed Rendell did. That won't get you everywhere if people aren't happy with your policies. But I think it would help offset some of his problems, and he doesn't have that.
Well, let me follow with you, Dave, and talk a bit about Tom Wolf and the primary. He had a lot of money. He spent it early. He got his name out. He won by a really commanding lead. Does that work in the fall? I mean, what works in a primary? Will that work in the fall?
It's a certainly different context. I mean, he was in a five-candidate race, at times a larger, a greater number of candidates than that. Voters are less, you know, are paying less attention, and so it takes less to sort of get a bigger chunk of the vote. And his ads were brilliantly done by Saul Shore, who was a Philadelphia consultant. And when he was attacked, I mean, again, the attacks came from candidates who themselves didn't quite have the kind of heft to get the full attention of voters that an opponent in a general election would, where it's one-on-one and people are kind of the choice is clear. So I just think it was harder for him. And it's interesting, you know, he managed to survive those attacks, and I think he responded to them very well, but he didn't go negative on his opponents.
No.
And when I interviewed him in May, I said, do you think you'll be able to do that in the fall, avoid going negative? He says, I would certainly try. He pointed out that he was in the Peace Corps in India, and he said, you know, Gandhi said, you don't achieve noble ends by ignoble means. Now, within a short time, that's gone out the window, and he's got commercials in which he is personally attacking Tom Corbett. So you can see it's a very different environment.
In fact, we'll be playing some of those ads a little bit later in the game, or in the show, I should say. I don't know what I was thinking there. To you, though, Chris Bork, and picking up on even personality, as Dave said, Tom Corbett, not known for his charisma. I heard a piece of Tom Wolf last night at this comedy club basically saying, you know, he's a little more charismatic than Senator Bob Casey. Is charisma an issue, do you think, in the Commonwealth for voters?
It's interesting.
Can you damn yourself with fame?
I don't know.
I was going to say, if Bob Casey is the model of charisma, we really changed the standards in contemporary American politics. And Wolf isn't traditionally charismatic. I don't think he's a particularly powerful speaker. He's not overly energetic, if you will, in terms of his persona. But he plays what he is well. I think he plays that kind of geeky, if you will, individual, in a way that is attractive to voters. At least it was is clearly through those ads, as Dave noted in the Democratic primary, and the image played pretty well. And I don't think given the standing of this race, and that really it starts as a referendum on Governor Corbett, that someone that's necessarily charismatic and perhaps even volatile in some ways is what the Democratic Party needs. In some ways, they need a steady hand and someone that is generally likable but very solid, and therefore putting it back on the governor, making it more about the governor. And I think Tom Wolf has always posed a fairly difficult matchup for the governor just because of those characteristics.
I'll just add that he presents himself as a likable guy with good values who wants to bring people together and move forward. And the fact that he's not from Philadelphia, he's not a big city tax and spend Democrat who's held elected office and had budget issues or anything like that. He's a guy from closer to the middle of the state, York, Pennsylvania, right, and has a background in business. So I think they're confident that he can appeal to moderate Republicans and independents.
Chris, about a minute before our first break here, Pennsylvania is a big state. Do you think ads are really, there are now, we learned, you know, there are going to be three debates, but do you think ads will define the winner of this race?
Yeah, I mean, ads are always crucial, Marty, and that's why we still see the lion's share of campaign finance going to that. It's by far the biggest chunk of spending that we used in campaigns, and it's crucial. We saw a case of that with Tom Wolf's decision to get out in the ads on the air early in the spring. And really, really set the race. Now, it's a little different in this situation, but we're going to see an enormously expensive ad buy by both of these campaigns throughout the fall.
That's Chris Bork. He's a professor of political science at Muhlenberg College, also director of the Muhlenberg College Institute of Public Opinion, here with us in our Philadelphia studio. Dave Davies, senior reporter at WHYY. He fills in for Terry Gross on Fresh Air. He's got his blog Off Mic at Newsworks. In fact, he does everything here at WHYY. And this is the debut of a program we're calling Ballot Talks every Thursday on Radio Times into November, talking about election and politics of interest to our listeners. And we want to hear from you in fact, send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org. We'll be right back.
Penn Medicine supports WHYY. If you are among the thousands of people in our region who are affected by heart disease, now you can find Penn Medicine Heart and Vascular Care in Chester County at Chester County Hospital. They've brought the strength and experience of Penn's Heart and Vascular Center to the community. More about Penn Medicine Heart and Vascular Care in Chester County at pennccheart.org. Penn Medicine. Your life is worth Penn Medicine. pennccheart.org.
Hi, I'm Stephen Quinn. Spam email and the people who send them are the subjects of acclaimed Spanish photographer Cristina Di Medel's latest project. She talks about what spam tells us about the world today, coming up on Cue the Summer from PRI, Public Radio International.
Tonight at 9 on WHYY.
I'm Jeremy Hobson. NASA Administrator Charles Bolden runs an agency that's exploring the outer limits of the universe, but he got his start on Earth in the segregated South.
My being here is very improbable. If anybody had asked if I would be here when I was growing up in South Carolina, I think the answer would have been a resounding no way.
We'll talk with Charles Bolden next time on Here and Now from NPR and WBUR Boston.
This afternoon at 1 on WHYY.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscow, and again talking with Dave Davies and Chris Borick about Pennsylvania politics and the fact that the governor's race is underway. And if you want to join our conversation, send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and you can send us a tweet at WHYY Radio Times. I do want to play two ads, and I want to begin with a Corbett ad. In fact, this is the newest attack ad from the Corbett campaign, alleging that Tom Wolf has skirted taxes and moved his company from Pennsylvania to Delaware. Let's listen.
Millionaire Tom Wolf says as governor, he'll raise the state income tax on many middle-class Pennsylvania families. Wolf thinks these hardworking Pennsylvanians just aren't paying their fair share. The same Tom Wolf who made over $1 million some years, but paid a tax rate half of what the average Pennsylvanian paid, and moved his company to Delaware to keep from paying his fair share of Pennsylvania taxes. Tom Wolf. Higher taxes for you, less for him.
Dave, is the operative word millionaire?
Yeah, it's interesting that you know, and, you know, Stephen Medvick, a professor from Franklin and Marshall, made the point to me yesterday that it's interesting to see that the Corbett campaign constantly referring to him as Millionaire Tom Wolf, sometimes Multi-Millionaire Tom Wolf. And it's sort of like it's the they're painting him as the Mitt Romney of the election, a guy who's made a fortune, who cuts corners, who thinks of himself, the one percenter, who doesn't pay his own fair share. And it's sort of different from the typical Republican attack on a Democrat, which is that he's like a tax and spend liberal who's going to, you know, run the state budget into deficits and raise your taxes. They're also doing that, but yeah, they want to paint him as this out of touch millionaire.
Well, and Chris, this gets a little bit into the weeds, but it does make reference to something that Tom Wolf has at least given some outlines to, the idea of putting in a progressive income tax. We have a flat tax now, income tax in Pennsylvania. And in this ad, we hear, you know, he's going to raise income taxes on middle-class Americans or middle-class Pennsylvanians. Well, this, I realize we don't have a lot of information to base this on, but as an ad, do you think this is effective?
Well, I think it is building upon something that the Governor Corbett's campaign thinks it's still a strength, and that's the issue of maintaining taxes and not increasing taxes. Well, we could have a debate on has the governor done that through his transportation bill and some other areas. He claims that largely taxes have remained the same and the tax burden for Pennsylvanians over his term, and that's part of his, you know, promises kept campaign slogan. I think you're trying to juxtapose Tom Wolf as someone that's going to mess with that strength of what Corbett thinks the Corbett campaign thinks they've done. And so, yeah, they're going to try to paint him anyway as a threat on tax issues. They're also going to call him, among the many things they're calling him millionaire, they're calling him Secretary Wolf to try and link him to the Rendell administration. They call him Pennsylvania's top tax collector in the past from his job as Revenue Secretary. So try to link him, if you will, with taxes, link him with the Rendell administration as much as possible to paint someone that's probably a bit of a threat on tax issues.
They're also calling him a tax hypocrite as well, Dave. And this also gets a bit into the weeds, but there's this reference to where his company is headquartered.
Right. This refers to the Delaware loophole. But before we get there, Marty, just another thought on this.
Sure.
This business about Wolf wanting to change the basis of the Pennsylvania income tax is actually kind of, I think, one of those clear policy differences that's worth paying a little bit of attention to. Now, he hasn't outlined the specifics of his plan, and his unwillingness to be specific is something that Corbett's needling him about. But what, you know, currently the federal income tax is a progressive tax. You know, the rates are lower if you're poor. You pay a higher rate if you're more affluent. But in Pennsylvania, there's a uniformity clause in the state constitution on taxes, and the rate is flat. Everybody pays 3.07% on all of the wages they earn, even if you're very poor. Wolf has essentially said, we're gonna make it fairer. We're going to give poorer people a break. And while he hasn't outlined the specifics of what it would be, in an interview last week, he gave an example. And essentially what they would do is exempt the first $30,000 of income from any tax and then raise the rate
progressively
on what you'd – well, it would be the same flat rate for everybody.
Okay.
It would be 5%. But the point would be it would effectively mean that you pay more if you're an upper-income earner and less if you're a lower-income earner. So – and Chris Komisak of the service Capital Wire did an analysis and figured out that at the break-even point is at around $78,000 a year. If you make less from that under the Wolf example, you're going to get a tax break. If you make more than that, you're going to pay more. And so the Wolf's Tom Corbett's ad is correct in saying, yes, this would increase the tax burden on a lot of people, thousands, but three-quarters of taxpayers would get a break. And so it really is kind of a policy difference. If you think the tax system ought to be higher rates for upper-income earners, then you would agree with Wolf. And if you want to keep it the way it is, then that's what Tom Corbett is defending.
Well, and this whole Delaware loophole thing, which is one of the things – in fact, I remember interviewing the governor. I mean, many people have railed against this Delaware loophole. They accuse Tom Wolf of taking advantage of that. True, not true, Dave? Is it hard – can we say –
I think you can't say authoritatively, and you might want to get an extra cup of coffee. We're going to try and make this simple.
Okay.
I mean, what the Delaware loophole is, it's a way that Pennsylvania corporations lower their tax burden, corporate tax burden in the state. And what they do is they have a subsidiary in Delaware, and you have your Delaware subsidiary charge you, your Pennsylvania company, for things like the use of a trademark or marketing services. And so you kind of have this phony service where you pay money out of your profits to your Delaware subsidiary and then take that as a tax write-off in Pennsylvania and reduce your tax burden. And a lot of people do it. Now, Tom Wolf's company is registered in a lot of states. It is chartered in Delaware, as are many companies that like the way that state's corporate laws function. An example is the company that owns the Philadelphia Inquirer and Daily News. Huh. Their operations are clearly in Pennsylvania. Their employees are clearly in Pennsylvania. But they're chartered there in Delaware. The fact that someone establishes a charter in Delaware does not mean that they're gaining a tax advantage from it. And Wolf has consistently said he does not. And the Corbett campaign has not produced any evidence that he does get a tax advantage from it.
Have we seen his tax returns?
Well, that's the thing that would resolve it fully and completely. If the Wolf company released its corporate tax returns and they just said they're not going to do it.
Chris, let me go back to you. First of all, it's fascinating to hear both you and Dave describe in some detail some of the nuance in that particular ad. Do you think the public will resonate with things like income tax, with things like putting some of your company in Delaware? Does that play with the public, do you think?
Well, it's not a grant, a slam dunk, Marty, that it's a clear issue that resonates, especially as Dave really nicely and succinctly talked about the loophole. It's hard to get your handle on it. What they're hoping for, I believe, the Corbett administration, is to raise some questions about his overall ethics, if you will, as a businessman. Again, it's his strength, right? We go to strength. If you remember the 2012 presidential campaign, we'll bring Mitt Romney back into the conversation again. You know, it was assumed that his strength as a business leader would help him in the campaign, and the Obama administration went at that hard with the Bain Capital issues and those others. And the same here. If Tom Wolf's strength in many ways is to appeal as a businessman and someone that has been a good steward of his company, you start to chip away at that, right? Well, he's playing with tax loopholes, which everybody knows about in a general sense, but doesn't have a lot of specifics. So you go after that. You start chipping away at his, his strength as someone that can bring a business sense to the issue. And so I think taxes are always a good issue to go at. People are always a little nervous about tax issues. Making Wolf, again, somewhat of a threat on taxes is probably a good approach, but I'm not sure it's an approach that will by itself close the type of gaps we're seeing in the polls.
And let me quickly reintroduce the two of you. That's Chris Borick. He's a professor of political science at Muhlenberg College, director of the Muhlenberg College Institute of Public Opinion, here with us in Philadelphia. Dave Davies, senior reporter at WHYY. You can read his off-mic blog at Newsweek, and that's M-I-C blog at Newsweek's. Dave, you wanted to say something.
Yeah, I was just going to say, I mean, I think Chris is right, and I do think that if you take the ad that you just played and you take everything the announcer says as true, I think it can hurt Wolf. You know, a policy debate is one thing, but when you say that this is a rich guy who cheats, he cuts corners and avoids paying his fair share while he wants you to pay more, you know, it gets to his character. It bothers people on a personal, visceral level. And so I think it is a significant charge to throw. I'm not. I don't think it's entirely accurate.
I was going to say, does it matter if it's true or not?
Well, that's politics. You know, I mean, I think that I would call what he says about the Delaware loophole an exaggeration at least. And I think his presentation of what he says about the Wolf tax plan is a one-sided view of it. I mean, you can just as easily say Wolf's plan would give a tax break to three-quarters of you. But if you convince people that he's a rich guy who doesn't care about you and kind of cuts corners to get ahead, I think that can hurt. And that's why you see the Wolf campaign coming back pretty hard.
Well, and in fact, we're going to play a Wolf campaign ad. And just a quick recap here, we are getting an update on Pennsylvania's gubernatorial race with Dave Davies and Chris Borick. And again, this is the debut of a program we're calling Ballot Talks. And every Thursday in this hour of Radio Times, we'll be covering elections that are taking place in the WHYY listening area, also talking about some of the issues that bubble up as these races continue into the fall. And again, you can send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and you can send us a tweet at WHYY Radio Times. Let me play another ad, and this is from Tom Wolf's campaign. Candidate Wolf responds to the Corbett ad, alleging that Corbett's administration has not served the middle class. Let's listen.
Have you seen Tom Corbett's ads attacking me? Get real. It's Tom Corbett who's been sticking it to the middle class on taxes. Corbett cut $1 billion from education. Now, almost 80% of school districts plan to raise property taxes. Meanwhile, we're the only state that doesn't charge oil and gas companies an extraction tax. But Corbett raised your gas taxes through the roof. I'm Tom Wolf. I'll be a governor who stands up for the middle class for a change.
Chris, going back to you and obviously answering back with a set of charges against the Corbett administration having to do with education, saying that 80% of districts, not just Philadelphia, but districts in the state having to raise property taxes, and also this severance tax or extraction tax that's been around for some time now. Do you think these charges have some punch to them?
Yeah, and just like Dave talked about, Marty, before, the complexities of the numbers, right, in terms of the actual cuts in education budget is difficult to discern. We're starting, when we start including stimulus money, you know, those figures become debatable. But I think, just like Dave noted, in terms of potentially strong arguments to make, this is a very strong argument for Tom Wolf, linking education cuts, whatever they may be, with the extraction tax issue. I think we saw his ads earlier this year, and I still think it was his best ad in the spring, where candidate Wolf was sitting at the table with the little school children talking about budget cuts in one of those little chairs that you see in kindergarten. He's sitting down and he's saying that hey, kids, they're cutting a lot of budgets in education in the state, but the answer is right under our feet. And, of course, that means an extraction tax, which polls really well in Pennsylvania. We've polled this a number of times. Most Pennsylvanians are supportive of the shale gas industry in the state, but most are also very supportive of some type of extraction tax, which, indeed, Pennsylvania is the only state that does not have one in terms of shale gas extraction. So I think it's a powerful argument. I think it resonates generally with the public as a simple relationship that Wolf is going to hit over and over and over through this campaign.
Well, going back to you, Dave, Corbett took a no-tax pledge. I mean, this was a number of years ago while he was running for governor, saying, I'm not going to raise taxes.
Yeah, and he'll say that he kept that pledge. I mean, the gas surtax, he says, is not. You know, that was a surtax to assist in critically needed infrastructure. You know, one of the interesting things to me about these two ads that you just played, Marty, is that when you hear the Corbett ads attacks Wolf, it's never Corbett himself. It's the announcer with that voice, you know, Tom Wolf, convicted horse thief. I mean, that kind of thing.
I know, we know that voice.
Right,
yes.
And although it's interesting that he uses a woman in the most recent ad, but in the Wolf ad, he's coming back and it's him speaking directly to camera. You know, I'm that nice guy, the guy that drives the Jeep. Remember me from the primary? Have you seen this stuff? Get real. So I think it's interesting that he takes that approach that just says, you know, don't listen to this stuff. You know me. But in the course of making his case, he makes the case about education funding, which I think is a valid but debatable point to make. But then he goes a little further and says that Tom Corbett kind of raised your gas taxes through the roof. And what's weird about that is that refers to this thing which was a transportation funding bill supported by Democrats and that, you know, Wolf himself has been supportive of. And in fact, after that ad came out, the Corbett campaign released a video of Tom Wolf just a couple of days before that, speaking at some event in which he explicitly praised the governor, the legislature, and the governor for having the courage to get the funding for, transportation improvements.
Infrastructure, all of that.
So, I think what you see here is that Tom Wolf is being pulled into the game, as you earlier mistakenly described what we're engaged in. This ain't beanbag, as
it
somebody
beanbag.
Once said.
Yeah. Well, you know, now that we're down in the weeds here, interestingly, Dave, Tom Corbett has taken pensions as an important topic, something that he's campaigning on. There is, I think, sort of looming at some point a pension problem. I don't know if it's a crisis or not, but he is taking this on.
Yeah, public employee pensions are a problem for state and local governments everywhere for a whole lot of shared reasons, among them kind of the cowardice of past politicians to adequately fund promises they've made to their workers and then stock market performance and all kinds of other things.
Yeah.
But it is a problem. It's going to be a growing problem. And he cast away his record of having on-time budgets and refused to sign the current state budget for well into the next fiscal year, and then demanded that the legislature come back and enact pension reform. And he's staking a lot on this, and in some ways it's an issue that plays well for him because a lot of Americans don't get the kind of pensions that public employees get, so he can play on that resentment, and he can point out the fact that Wolf does not per se have a plan for this problem and gets a lot of money from public employee unions. There are two problems with this. One is that it's an issue that voters don't react to viscerally. It's complicated. And then the other is that the specific bill that Corbett wants the legislature to enact, it's generally understood won't have much of an impact for a decade or two. You'd still have a huge problem. But it's interesting that he seized on that. I will note, Marty, that he hasn't spent advertising money on it. He's put out press releases. He's made public statements. But if he thought it would really move voters, you'd see paid ads about it.
And that's Dave Davies, who joins us along with Chris Borick, giving us an update, a preview of Pennsylvania's gubernatorial race. In fact, it's already underway with a number of hard-hitting ads back and forth between the two mainstream candidates, incumbent Tom Corbett and challenger Democrat Tom Wolf. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
The Dell Music Center proudly supports WHYY and presents jazz artists Al Jarreau and David Sanborn in a double bill concert at the newly renovated Dell Music Center in Fairmount Park. Two of America's noted jazz players, with more than a dozen Grammy Awards between them, will collaborate on Thursday, August 21st at 8 p.m. Concert parking is available. Information at mydelleast.com. The Dell Music Center, where the stars take center stage. The Dell Music Center proudly supports WHYY.
We now live in a time of endless possibility. More has been learned about the treatment of the human body in the last 5 years than was learned in the previous 500.
The new Cinemax series, The Nick, is set in a turn-of-the-century New York City hospital. It's directed by Steven Soderbergh and stars Clive Owen. On the next Fresh Air, we talk with the show's writers and the medical historian who advises them. Join us.
This afternoon at 3 and again tonight at 7 on WHYY.
Go home and stay home.
We already had a law in the books that said they needed to be inside by midnight. It's like looking for a needle in a haystack and then adding more hay to the pile.
Do you know where your kids are at 9 p.m., 10 p.m., or 11 p.m.? Cities experiment with curfews and law enforcement faces new challenges dealing with at-risk youth. Conversation next time on The Takeaway from PRI Public Radio International.
Today at noon on WHYY.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen, and this is the debut of Ballot Talks, our every Thursday first hour on Radio Times series that debuts today. We're going to take it into November talking about a whole host of electoral issues. We hope to have some candidates on as well. We do have two guests who are with us, Chris Bork, professor of political science at Muhlenberg College, director of the Muhlenberg College Institute of Public Opinion, Dave Davies, senior reporter here at WHYY. He blogs at Newsworks. I should say to our listeners, our phones are down. I apologize for that, but we will be reading your emails, and you can send us tweets as well, radiotimes@whyy.org, and you can send us a tweet at WHYY Radio Times. If I can go back to you, Chris Bork, and I'm thinking about the Affordable Care Act and even the Medicare or Medicaid expansion. Tom Corbett, one of the Republican governors who did not sign up for that, do you think this will become an issue as the campaign progresses?
Yeah, I think so, Marty. I mean, the Affordable Care Act remains one of the more salient issues in terms of American politics, and so it's going to play out even at the state and gubernatorial level, and especially, as you mentioned, because of the governor's decision to not opt into the Medicaid expansion. I think it was pretty clear that the governor, in his decision to do that, to not opt into that part of Obamacare, was really playing to the Republican base. There are a few things that are more disliked than Obamacare, at least the general principle of Obamacare, among Republicans than that policy, and that he wanted to clearly draw some lines between himself, his administration, and that policy. Now it's opened up the door, even though Obamacare remains fairly unpopular in the state, as most polls have shown. It does open up the door for some criticism in terms of its fiscal implications for the state. Is Pennsylvania and the a number of the individuals in the state that could have benefited from the Medicaid expansion suffering because of the governor's move on this, which is clearly a political move? It's going to open up the door for some challenges on that front. At the same time, you can bet that as Tom Corbett has tried to link Tom Wolf to Ed Rendell, he'll do the same with Barack Obama, who remains unpopular in the state, and try to score points on that. So yeah, it'll be part of the campaign and raise itself at a number of points.
Picking up on that, to you, Dave, and there's no way of knowing the answer to this, do you see Obama coming into the state and campaigning for Tom Wolf, or would it depend on perhaps his poll numbers the end of October, beginning of November?
Yeah, I'd kind of be surprised if we saw that. I think he's going to, if he plays a role in this election cycle, it will be among probably congressional and Senate candidates where federal issues are more there. It was interesting to hear Chris talk about that, because this is a question where I would want to talk to somebody who does polling or understands polls. And, you know, we've been talking about the TV ad wars that we see. There's also a kind of a press release war that those of us who are on these email lists get every day. And so you can see the issues that the campaign aren't yet putting into TV ads, but they're just throwing at each other. And I don't recall in the last 2 months anything by either side about health care, health insurance, Obamacare, the Affordable Care Act. And it sort of makes me think that they've kind of thought about it and just not sure how it's going to play to independents and moderates. So I don't know if it's going to be an issue.
And Chris, who tends to vote, especially in, we know that in Pennsylvania, there the Democrats have an advantage in terms of registration, but we are talking about a Republican incumbent governor, a Republican legislature. When November rolls around, who are the likely voters? Do we know yet?
Yeah, it's such an important question, and one that really remains undefined in some ways. We know that in non-presidential elections, we're going to see turnout significantly lower than we would in for example, 2012. And we've seen, at this point, there are signs that even comparative with 2010 and 2006 and past elections, that we might be looking at turnout that's even lower. We saw that in the primary. Voters aren't very enthused in either party right now. We see on a number of signs through the polls that voters aren't showing enthusiasm, and that's usually a pretty good predictor of kind of macro level turnout in an election, in this case a fall election. So it's a big question of who's going to turn out. As you said, Marty, if there's two factors going on if you look at it. You know, Republicans usually, there's fewer of them in Pennsylvania, much fewer in terms of registration, but they turn out in larger numbers. They'll probably turn out in larger numbers this year, but the key for Republicans winning statewide office is not only turnout in larger numbers, but turnout really as a significantly larger percentage of the electorate. And I think that's going to be a challenge for Tom Corbett. As we discussed earlier, the base isn't particularly enamored with the governor. And can they make a case? Can they make a case this fall that Tom Wolf is a big enough threat to get those voters out, even if they aren't in love with Tom Corbett? And that's going to be, I think, a challenge that they're trying to address throughout the next few months.
Well, we're here in Philadelphia, Dave, and there are a lot of people in this city. But the question is, and largely Democratic, will they feel energized enough to go to the polls to vote for someone like Tom Wolf?
Yeah, that is the question. I mean, Tom Wolf's going to get, you know, between 80 and 85% of the vote in Philadelphia. The question is who turns out.
Is it 100,000 or 200,000?
Yeah, well, it'll be many hundreds of thousands, but it can matter if it's close, whether it's an enthusiastic turnout or a tepid one. I mean, you know, the single, I think, greatest predictor of voting participation is age. Older people vote, younger people tend not to, and I suspect we'll see that in this election too. It's a more Democratic than Republican electorate. We'll see how it goes.
We have an email from Chris. One major difference between Wolf and Corbett is marijuana policy. Corbett is against changing the laws. Do you see, Chris Borick, marijuana playing a role in the governor's race in Pennsylvania?
Yeah, it's an interesting issue. I mean, obviously, it's well discussed and something that you have a segment of the population fairly invested in terms of interest. There's a debate this fall in the state legislature about medical marijuana in the state that probably won't go too far. You know, Tom Wolf has been more open to discussions on this than Governor Corbett. Governor Corbett's shown some support for medical marijuana and a few comments about maybe thinking about legalization in a long context, but by no means supportive of it. I don't think it has the type of clout to really move a significant amount of voters. As I said before, there's a group within the state that it's a very salient issue, and they really care about it. But I don't think in terms of a game changer, marijuana is in that place.
I mean, this is Pennsylvania, right, Dave?
Right. And remember, as I said a moment ago, I mean, the electorate is older than the population. Older people tend to vote. This is not going to inspire them. I think there has been an issue about whether medical marijuana has been denied people who can use it. And Corbett modified his position, you know, in the spring or last year upon that. So I think that could cut.
Dave, let me ask you about Ron Tamales. He was education secretary in Pennsylvania, served for a time as an advisor on higher education. He left his job. It's been described as a ghost job. The Pittsburgh Post-Gazette got their hands on his calendar, I think his emails, his phone logs, and found some a lot of blank spaces.
Yeah, I mean, the guy left as a education secretary, and the Corbett administration gave him $39,000 job. It's the same salary as the Secretary of Education makes to advise the governor on education matters. And when they requested via the Right to Know Act to know what was the work product, when they asked the administration, give us the correspondence he's generated, there were a total of 5 emails, and none in the first 9 months of this. Few phone calls. It seems there seems a prima facie case that he wasn't doing much for this.
Yeah.
And at first, Corbett defended them in sort of in a general bland way. But I guess earlier this week, he resigned to staunch the bleeding. You know, I could imagine this having some legs, Marty. If it's either the governor gave this cushy, well-paid job to a buddy, or somebody else did and he just wasn't paying attention. I mean, if he is involved in the education issue, he would know. I mean, the other thing the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette is, apart from looking for documentation of his activity, they talked to other people in the field that he would have been active in, you know, the educational institutions that he was supposed to be working on. You hear from the guy?
Oh.
By and large, no. So,
he was education secretary.
Right. That's right. So, this is a mess up, and there have been no ads made on it, but I could see down the road, because, it's the kind of thing people could connect to. Hey,
yeah.
I work for my money.
Yeah, and employee, right?
Yeah, I don't make one-third of that, and, like, he gets this for doing nothing?
Mm. Yeah, can I just follow up?
Yeah,
please do, Chris. Yeah, go ahead.
I think Dave's point is excellent, and I think it cuts back to a potential strength. I mean, the governor has some liabilities, that's clear, but I think on a whole, his administration has been fairly clean. You know, not many ethics violations, not many charges of it, nothing too significant. And this does cut at one area that I think has been a potential strong point for the governor. And you go after strong points, or you want to try to diminish that. And I think this, as Dave said, is something that could resonate with regular voters, right? Hey, I do my job. I go, I work every day. I get myself up, I get in my car, and I go to work. Well, this guy is making a sum that is way above the median voter in the state, and he's not working for it. And so I think, as Dave said, although it's not been in an ad yet, mm-hmm. that's something that's tailor-made if the Wolf campaign seeks to go that direction.
Chris, let me go back to you. And we've been talking about the two Toms, Tom Corbett, Tom Wolf, the two mainstream party candidates for governor in Pennsylvania. And every time we do shows about electoral politics, we hear from third-party candidates, independent candidates, and their supporters saying how hard it is for them to get a toehold in this state. Do they have a point?
Oh, they've got a great point, Marty. We have, through our electoral system, our structures, made it incredibly hard for third parties to get ballot access, to be able to be in any way competitive. This is one, you can call it collusion if you want, between the Republicans and the Democrats to make it a particularly hard environment for third-party candidates. I mean, we've seen this over and over, the ballot challenges, right, that you have when even a marginal candidate attempts to get on a ballot, make it a really uphill battle. I've been on the show a number of times to talk about Pennsylvania [S2] Yeah. [S1] as a very voter-unfriendly state, and it's also a very third-party unfriendly state. We don't make our elections particularly attractive for voters, and we make it extremely hard for third parties to be competitive or even in the race.
This is a weird segue. I'm going to play a little clip from last night, and it was a fundraiser, but it was also a comedy event, and both Tom Corbett and Tom Wolf were there. And this is just a tiny little clip of Tom Corbett's part of his, his riff of last night. Let's listen.
Why do I have to do this? Politicians are not funny, intentionally. Just look at Joe Biden.
Why do they have to do this, Dave?
Isn't that funny?
It actually is moderately funny.
Stu Bykofsky of the Philadelphia Daily News here started this tradition, I think it's 24 years ago, of a comedy night in August in which And somehow he managed to get all of the candidates on stage to do 2 minutes of stand-up. And I guess what he does is he goes to your opponent. If your opponent commits, you seem like a chicken if you don't want to show up. So, and that was the Pittsburgh version, which sort of was inspired by the Philadelphia thing. Stu's event is tonight. Both Tom Corbett and Tom Wolfe will be there. And I've done a lot of these. And I will.
Are you going to go?
Not sure if I'm going to go there. Holly Otterbein is going to cover it for the station, so listen for her report tomorrow. I mean, it's what my observation of, over the years is that politicians are funny mostly when they're not trying to be.
That's true for most people.
It's kind of reassuring that stand-up isn't easy. I mean, these guys, it's pretty bad. But I think, you know, yeah, you don't want to seem like a stiff, so you go up and do your best.
Let me toss something else back at you, Dave, only because the Democratic National Committee is in Philadelphia, I think was in the city yesterday, and today scoping it out as a possible site for the convention in 2016. How big a deal do you think that would be for Pennsylvania if they got the DNC here for their 20s?
Not that big a deal.
Not that big a deal.
I mean, I mean, conventions aren't what they used to be. When was the last time we had a real convention fight? Maybe 1980 or. And so they're kind of staged events. The parties themselves are making them shorter. And it's interesting that fewer cities are competing for the honor of hosting the convention. I mean, I covered the city's effort to do this in 2000, which I think was in a different circumstance. The city was coming out of a dark period of near bankruptcy, and I think it was a great thing to boost the city's confidence. But the parties demand that the host cities put up tens of millions of dollars for the expenses that are associated with this. I mean, you have to completely outfit your arena. You have to build a huge temporary press structure with
sounds, you know, like
with
the Olympics, right?
Yeah, it's a huge thing, and although they will tell you the economic payoff is huge, the restaurants don't make money because all the events are catered and the reporters are spending all their time working on these inane stories they're going to tell us, and so it just, I don't know that it works, but Governor Ed Rendell and others are trying to raise tens of millions of dollars to get this thing, and it's be interesting to see with the Democratic Party. I mean, the one, Pennsylvania really isn't so much a competitive state in presidential elections anymore. I don't know how much that's going to affect the decision, but we're in the mix.
We're in the mix. On that note, Dave Davies, thank you very much, as always, for joining us today on Radio Times.
Good to be here.
And Chris Borg, thank you very much as well.
Thanks, Marty. Thanks, Dave.
Thanks to both of you. And again, the debut of Ballot Talks. Tune in next Thursday for another exciting installment of our series about election politics. Go to whyy.org/radiotimes, and you can find out much more about this program. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen. Thanks for joining us in this first hour of Radio Times, and do stay with us. We'll be right back.